Thwack.
My eyes crack open to a dull, repetitive sound coming from outside. Dim daylight filters through the tiny portals, illuminating just enough so that I can make out the medley of frying pans dangling from nails against the wall. I'm alone in our makeshift bed, and the air is cold. I tug the sleeping bag tight under my chin and curl into a ball, instantly feeling the pull of sore muscles. I can't tell how much of that is from sleeping on this thin foam mattress, and how much of it is because of my night with Jonah. The rain has stopped, at least, I note. That constant drum against the roof was a soothing white noise for me to finally drift off to in the wee hours. But now the ensuing silence is all the more deafening. Thwack! 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 Curiosity finally wins me over. Throwing off the sleeping bag, I step into my rain boots and grab Jonah's flannel jacket from the clothesline, knowing it'll cover enough of me. Hugging it tightly, I step outside. A thick, gloomy fog has settled over the soaked forest, shrouding the tall spruce trees and the narrow pathway to the plain. Even the outhouse has disappeared. It's almost ghostly in mood this morning. Jonah is off to the left, his back to me, bent over a sizable tree stump to position a log on its end. An axe sits nearby next to a small pile of freshly split wood. He's wearing nothing but his baggy jeans and unlaced boots. I settle against the doorframe and quietly admire the stretch and strain of the muscles in his naked back as he reaches for the axe.
How'd you sleep?
Jonah calls out suddenly, his voice especially gravelly in the morning. Pretty good. I clear the scratch from my throat. A bit thirsty.
Well, that's a huge surprise,
he mutters wryly.
That water we had should have lasted us a week.
Yeah, if you're a camel. And you're not used to polishing off a 2-liter bottle every day like I do back home. He glances over his shoulder, his gaze stalling on my bare thighs for a brief moment, before returning his focus to his task. He swings the axe, bringing it down on the chunk of wood. It splits in two. If there's such a thing as beautiful form while chopping wood, Jonah has it. Or maybe it's just him that's beautiful, because I could watch that broad chest and tapered waist all day long. A flash of his powerful shoulders and arms tensing over me last night comes to mind, and my lower belly instantly stirs with the memory. On impulse, I duck back into the cabin to grab Simon's cannon. I manage to snap a few candid in-action pictures before he turns and catches me.
What are you doing?
He asks warily. Nothing. Just, I want to remember this. I smile, setting the camera aside, as if I could ever forget it. He makes a grunting sound, and I can't tell if he's annoyed or just being Jonah.
I'll have the fire going again soon.
What time is it anyway? The battery on my phone has long since died.
Just after 6.
I make the reluctant trek toward where I know the outhouse is, unable to ignore my bodily needs and just wanting to get it over with at this point. Jonah walked me out in the rain 3 times last night and howled with laughter every time I ran out of the dingy, dark little box. I've never peed so fast in my life, and I hated every second of it. Shockingly enough, despite the lack of other basic comforts, it's the only thing I've hated about being stranded out here. Probably because Jonah has kept me well occupied. So, I'm guessing we can't take off yet? I ask on my way back, slathering sanitizer over my hands. Tall, damp weeds lick my bare legs as I trudge through the grass, leaving wet trails against my skin.
Not until this fog lifts. A few more hours at least.
2 halves of another log tumble to the ground with his powerful swing. My stomach lets out a well-timed grumble. Is there anything else besides that meat?
Protein bars.
Right. Dried meat and protein bars. This can't be good for anyone's digestive system. What would we do for food if we were actually stranded out here for a while anyway?
We'd be fine. I've got my fishing rod and the gun.
Jonah swings the axe. Thwack. Of course. We'd just go kill our meal. Naturally. The intimate, passionate Jonah from last night is absent this morning. He seems to be back to focused survivalist mode, much like he was when we arrived yesterday. I shouldn't complain. He's keeping me warm and fed, yet I ache for him to drop everything and kiss me again. What if he's decided that last night was a one-time deal? It probably should be before I get in too deep with him. Who's kidding who, though? I'm already acutely aware of his moods and potential thoughts, and caring too much about them. Isn't that the first sign that you've waded in too deep? Diana would swear it is. But acknowledging that doesn't change the fact that I still want him, badly. I feel a pinch and slap my thigh with a hiss, squashing a mosquito against my skin. Another one lands beside the corpse, oblivious and ready to feed.
You're about to get swarmed. They just came out,
Jonah murmurs, grabbing an armload of wood and marching toward the cabin, his bootlaces dragging through the grass. He gets to work relighting the fire while I track down the few bugs that followed us in. Forget another bank job. I should just find someone to pay me to do this all day, I mutter with grim satisfaction.
There's a small can of repellent somewhere in that bag, if you want to spray yourself.
Why not? I'm already filthy, I mutter. With another fire crackling, Jonah pulls his shirt off the line and slides it over his head.
Give it a few minutes, and then stick one log in.
I frown. Wait. Where are you going? He gives me a look.
You said you were thirsty, so I'm getting you water from the river.
Oh, thanks. He grabs an old dented metal pot off the wall.
I want to check on the plane anyway.
I'm torn between a gush of warmth that Jonah's still catering to my basic needs and utter disappointment that he might have already had his fill of meeting my other need. Him. He heads for the door. Wait, I blurt out. You forgot this. He pauses to look over his shoulder. I take a deep breath and then peel off his bulky flannel jacket. The cool air skates over my bare skin as I stand there in nothing but my military red rain boots, holding my breath, waiting for him to respond, hoping to God he doesn't deny me. With a heavy sigh and a soft curse, he tosses the pot back onto the counter. My stomach does a nervous but victorious flip as he reaches over his head to yank his shirt off.
Don't say I didn't take care of you out here,
he warns, stalking toward me, his hands making quick work of his belt. I pause to grab one last picture of the safety cabin, capturing the wooden archway in front and a partially cloudy mountain range in the background.
Come on, we've gotta go,
Jonah hollers. And the angry Yeti is officially back.
What?
Nothing. I just wanted a shot of this, I murmur, stuffing my camera into its case. He's been in a rush ever since the fog dissipated not even a half hour ago, making quick work of camp cleanup so we could get moving. It's like he suddenly can't get out of here fast enough. I'm trying not to take it personally. He sighs heavily.
I'm being an ass, aren't I?
While the actual apology doesn't come out, I sense it there. At least you're learning when to admit it. That's progress. I trail him down the path, my annoyance fading almost instantly. His emergency gear hangs from his shoulder, the sleeping bag and foam pad once again rolled tidily and tightly, as if they didn't aid and abet in a night of private acts.
How bad do you want to get home?
To be honest, I think I'm going to miss this place. I'm going to miss having Jonah all to myself, despite the fact that my clothes and hair reek of smoke from the wood stove, and I'm desperate for a shower and a toothbrush.
I'm definitely going to miss that table.
Heat explodes over my face as an image of that particularly intimate moment hits me. But at least I'm not the only one who's still thinking about us. What happens now, though? We'll fly back to Bangor, and then what? I'm booked to leave next weekend, and yet here I am again wondering if I should stay. Where exactly will that leave Jonah and me, though? Are we going to secretly screw in between hopping into planes and throwing around casual banter? Or will I be waking up in Jonah's bed tomorrow morning? As I quietly take in the powerful body I became so well acquainted with last night, I already know I'd much prefer the latter. What would my dad make of that, though? He joked about Jonah and me hooking up, but would he actually be happy to find out that we did? It's probably for the best anyway. You don't need to be repeating our mistakes. It's not like we're repeating my parents' mistakes, though. We didn't meet each other in some bar and fall madly in love. We didn't even like each other at first. And I'm not about to get caught up in some false romantic fantasy about moving to Alaska. I like him now, true. I think I like him a lot. He's not like any other guy I've ever dated or crushed on. And while he's capable of making my blood boil like no one else, I feel a magnetic pull toward him that I can't explain. But there's a very clear expiration date to whatever this is between us, and I haven't lost sight of that. Well, I might have for a few hours last night. I will miss Jonah when I leave Alaska, and I am leaving Alaska at some point. That I'm sure of. The question is just a matter of when, and how many times I want a repeat of last night until then. We step out into the clearing, and for the first time since coming into this valley, I'm able to fully grasp the vast open wilderness before us, and how remote we truly are. Two tiny figurines with looming walls of rock that reach to the sky on either side of us. The wide river ahead trickles and rolls over a bed of rocks and driftwood. The water shallow and sparse in places, but continuously flowing. Our plane sits where we left it, a small speck in a cavernous valley beyond, quietly waiting for Jonah to fly us home. He pops the door for me and then goes about getting us ready while I take more pictures. I can't help but watch every methodical step. His hands that were so attentive to me earlier, smoothing over the plane's body with near reverence. His gaze, that has been on every square inch of my body many times over, now studying every square inch of metal critically. By the time he climbs into his seat, my skin is flushed and I'm wondering what sex would be like in a plane. "There's more room in here than I first thought," I murmur, eyeing the back seat. He chuckles as he starts flipping switches.
"We can't do this right now."
"Do what?" I ask innocently, even as my cheeks burn. How the hell does he know what I'm thinking? And what is wrong with me? I'm not normally needy like this. He peers up at the daunting ridges and the wisps of cloud hovering around them.
"We're going to go through the pass to look for the lanyards."
Thoughts of climbing onto Jonah's lap fade as real life takes over. "We can't land up there, can we?"
"Not likely, but we should at least look."
I should have known Jonah would want to do that. He doesn't seem the type to be able to report a missing person and then simply move on with his day. I sigh with a hint of trepidation. "Okay, if you say it's fine."
"It is. Trust me."
Jonah smooths his hand over my thigh and my blood begins to race.
"We can revisit that other conversation later, but for right now, I need your focus and your eyes."
"And they definitely said they were going up into Rainy Pass?" I ask, as we clear the last section of the mountain range, having found no signs of the hikers, but plenty of tense moments where the cloud cover shifted to mask entire peaks. Dense trees and a vast system of lakes stretch before us as far as my eyes can see. I sink back into my seat, taking what feels like the first deep breath since we took off, wishing for a stiff drink. Jonah holds up a creased piece of paper with a map and a hand-drawn line with several X marks.
"This was the planned route they gave me just in case."
"Which we basically just flew over, as much as we could anyway. So now what?" I wince, the bumping and jostling from the turbulence having done little good for the blossoming caffeine headache behind my eyes. Jonah's shrewd gaze studies the fuel gauge as he bites his bottom lip in thought.
"Man, Ren and Aggie are gonna be pissed."
"Why?" I ask warily.
"Because they hate it when I change plans."
Jonah's hands are tight on the yoke as he dips our plane to the right and brings us around.
"And I'm changing plans."
"There!" I shriek, my adrenaline surging as I stab the air. A sagging yellow dome tent sits on the ridge to our right. One person, likely a female given the long ponytail, is jumping up and down, frantically waving her arms in the air. The person beside her remains seated on the ground, propped up by a pile of rocks and covered by a neon orange blanket. Is that them?
"They're way off course, but yeah, pretty sure that's them. And he's hurt."
Jonah eyes the flat patch of ridge behind them with a calculating look that makes my stomach drop. "You can't land here."
"I've landed on worse."
After another moment of consideration, he shakes his head.
"I could, but I wouldn't get back up with the added weight."
He curses under his breath, and then with a sigh, he tips the wing toward them before leveling off, a signal that we've noticed them. The woman falls to her knees and throws her arms around the man's neck, and I'm hit with a wave of chest-warming relief. God only knows what their story is and what the situation is, but her joy is unmistakable, even from the air. Jonah gets on the radio. Within minutes, a search and rescue team have the couple's coordinates, and a helicopter is en route. How'd you know to look here? Jonah veered off in another direction on the way back.
Just a hunch. Sometimes people get these two rivers mixed up.
He drags a finger along the photocopied map.
They were smart enough to camp out where they did, though. If they'd stayed down here, there's no way we would have seen them, and who knows how long it would have taken the rescue guys to fly out this way. They could have been out here for another week easily.
His chest heaves with a sigh, and I catch the faintest "thank God" under his breath. That would have really bothered you, huh?
It would have bugged the shit out of me,
he admits.
I would have dropped you off, fueled up, and come right back.
Is that why you were in such a rush to get back in the air? He wasn't being an ass. Well, maybe he was, but it's more that he wanted to find them. Jonah pauses.
Nah, I was just afraid you'd take off your clothes again.
His lips twitch as he tries to hide his smile. I give his arm a playful smack, and the corners of his eyes crinkle with his smile. He reaches down to squeeze my hand before putting it back on the yoke.
Come on, let's go home. This is going to be a treat,
Jonah mutters, steering the plane in with an air marshal's guidance, his blue gaze on Agnes as she marches toward us. She doesn't look angry, I say doubtfully. Agnes's face is typically serene. Sure, there's no wide smile to greet us. If anything, she seems hesitant to approach.
She never does. That's part of her superpower.
Well, at least we found the hikers. They'll be happy about that.
Yeah, they will be.
Jonah sets his headset down with a sigh, smoothing a hand over his beard.
But Ren hates it when I fly in on fumes, and this time I did it with you.
I frown. Wait, what do you mean, fly in on fumes? I look down at the gauge with new alarm as it registers. Did we almost run out of gas? In the air?
Nah, she probably had another 5 miles or so in her.
He pats the plane's door affectionately. 5 miles? Probably? Are you insane? Thank God I didn't know about that.
Relax. I was watching the line and doing the math. If I didn't think we could make it, I'd have found somewhere to put her down.
You mean like on a pile of rocks in a field? Has he already forgotten that he crashed a plane a few days ago? I get a sharp glare in return, a warning that throwing that in his face was not a good idea.
No, on one of the sandbars that we passed.
Fine. So we would have been stranded in the middle of nowhere without heat, eating beef jerky and protein bars? I don't bother hiding my irritation.
Hey, you're the one who was sizing up the back seat of the plane for us.
He slides out before I can get a proper retort in. Not that I necessarily have one handy. My flare of anger fades to annoyance as I watch him round the nose. He pulls my door open for me and holds a hand out. On impulse, I swat it away and hop down. My rubber boots hit the gravel with a soft thud. Just a week ago, showing up here in my wedge heels, I would have needed him. God, what was I even thinking wearing those here?
So now you don't need me. Funny, I don't remember you pushing my hand away last night when I was...
He grunts with the impact of my fist against his hard gut. Shut up, I hiss, giving him a warning as I glance around, hoping the air marshal didn't catch that. He chuckles and squeezes the back of my neck in a way that could look platonic, except his fingers find their way past my hair to linger against my skin.
Hey, Aggie, did rescue call with an update on the Lanards? They're taking them to Anchorage now,
Agnes confirms.
Apparently, they got disoriented in the fog, and then Mr. Lanard slid down a washed-out slope and broke his leg, lost his sat phone in the tumble.
Jonah snorts.
That's an anniversary trip they'll never forget.
Oh, my God. Another wave of relief swarms over me. What if we hadn't done that second pass? What if Jonah hadn't thought to look where we did? He could have been out there with a broken leg for days.
Feels pretty good helping people in trouble, huh?
Jonah's gaze searches the plane lot.
Where's Ren? Might as well get his licks in on me now.
Agnes's brow tightens. Yeah, I... Not until she turns those steady eyes on me do I finally see the pain and sadness that overwhelms them? I hold my breath as I push through the door.
Look who made it back,
my dad murmurs, his voice groggy and weak. I've only ever seen him in his jeans and layers of flannel. He looks so different, lying there in his hospital gown, so frail and vulnerable. Mabel's in a chair next to him, her legs pulled to her chest, her arms wrapped tightly around her knees. Her eyes are red and puffy, with the stunned glaze of someone who sat down to watch a comedy, only to have the curtain pulled back and discover she's about to witness a horror. They finally told her about the cancer. I find no relief in that, though it was time anyway. She'd wonder why he wasn't home in the evening for their checkers games.
Time to go now, Mabel,
Agnes calls from the door. She doesn't move. My dad gives her an encouraging smile.
I'll be out of here soon.
Promise? She asks, her voice so feeble and childlike, and unlike her.
Promise, kiddo.
Unfolding slowly, reluctantly, she climbs out of her seat, her dusty sneakers leaving bits of dirt. She leans in to give him a hug.
Careful, Mabel,
Agnes warns. With a quiet nod, she moves to dart past Jonah and me, flashing me a look that is full of sorrow and youthful resentment. She's figured out why I really came to Alaska, and she's not one bit happy that I kept her in the dark.
Hey,
Jonah calls out as she tries weaseling past him. He reaches out and grabs hold of her before she has the chance to get away, effortlessly pulling her against his chest in a hug. She doesn't struggle, instead bowing her head and burying her face in his jacket. A single sob ratchets up from her lungs, and it makes the already painful ball in my throat swell instantly. Jonah quietly strokes the back of her long dark hair with his hand for a few moments, and then, with a deep exhale, murmurs softly,
"Kay, go with your mom, kiddo."
They leave, and now it's just the three of us. My dad's gray eyes skitter back and forth between us before settling on me.
So, Calla, first night stranded in the mountains. How was it?
It could have been a lot worse, I guess, I admit.
You two stayed at the safety cabin? I'll bet you've never stayed anywhere like that before.
No, I haven't. And it's the absolute last thing I want to talk about right now, but I can tell my dad's trying to avoid dealing with the current situation for just a little while longer.
Barbie had it pretty damn good, I'd say,
Jonah chuckles. I shoot him a glare even as my cheeks flush. Aside from the mediocre company, I'm looking forward to a hot shower and real food. I'm maxed out on beef jerky. Who am I kidding? My appetite has vanished.
Beef jerky?
My dad glances at Jonah, his eyes narrowing curiously.
From Ethel,
Jonah explains.
Her homemade stuff. Calla liked it. Well, that's good.
My dad lets out a soft cough and then winces. Does it hurt? I look down at his chest, wondering where exactly the doctors stuck that long needle in, the one that drained the fluid that's been building up in his lungs, that had him wheezing last night.
It's actually a lot better than it's been the last couple of days. They've got me on some good drugs.
Despair hits me in a wave. He's been suffering for days? Why didn't you say something?
Nah.
He gives me a resigned smile, waving it off. The hospital bracelet slides down his forearm. I'm sorry. We should have been there. But the rain and then the fog. Jonah said we couldn't fly. My eyes begin to burn with tears. It's all true, and yet I can't help but ache with guilt for how we spent the night and morning while this was going on.
If Jonah said you couldn't, then I know you couldn't. Besides, I told Agnes not to say anything if he called in. I didn't want him taking any unnecessary risks to get here sooner. Don't worry. It's nothing. Just a complication. Wasn't even that serious. I'll be out in a day or two.
I let out a shaky sigh of relief. I'm coming with you when you go to Anchorage for treatment, and I'm canceling my ticket as soon as I get back to my dad's. I don't know why I ever wondered if I should be here. Seeing my dad lying there, in that hospital bed now, there's nowhere else I could be. My dad's gaze averts to his hands.
Ren?
Jonah's jaw tenses.
This ain't right anymore. You need to tell her now, or I will.
A sinking feeling settles into my body. What are you talking about? Tell me what? I turn to my dad. What's he talking about?
You're supposed to fly Dempsey and his crew up to their spot today. They're probably waiting for you. Run? Okay, Jonah. Okay.
He sighs with resignation, pats the air.
Why don't you get those guys where they need to go? Give me some time to talk to my daughter.
Jonah bows his head a long moment and then grips the side of my face and pulls my temple toward his lips, pressing a kiss against it, lingering there for 1, 2, 3 beats.
I'm sorry,
he whispers, and then he's gone out the door.
Well, it's good to see you're finally getting along,
my dad murmurs, smiling. Yeah, despite everything, I feel my cheeks flush.
Pull up a chair. Stay a while.
He gestures to the seat Mabel just left. It's still warm when I settle into it. What's going on, Dad? I ask, my voice shaky with wariness. He simply studies my face, long and hard. Dad?
Your grandfather had lung cancer, too. You knew that, right?
Yeah, Mom told me. My dad nods slowly.
Same kind that I have. Small cell. It's more rare than the other kind, and yet we both got it. And it grows fast. By the time they found it in him, his odds weren't great. But he figured he should listen to everyone else and do the chemo.
He shakes his head.
Those last 6 months of his life were hell. He was in Anchorage a lot, and when he wasn't, he barely got out of bed. My mom took good care of him. As good as she could, anyway, but it wasn't easy on either of them. By the time he called it quits on treatment, he was just a shell of a man.
My dad chews on his bottom lip a moment.
One of the last things he ever said to me was that he wished he'd just made peace with it from the beginning. He would have had less time, but at least he might have enjoyed it more. He would have spent his last days on his terms. And that always stuck in my head.
Realization dawns on me as I begin to understand where my father's going with this. And the horrible, sinking feeling that settled earlier gives way to a numbing calm. But that was like 30 years ago. Everything's more advanced. The chances of surviving—
There's no surviving this, Calla,
he says with grim finality.
Not this type. Not this far in.
But you're fine. He's nothing like Mrs. Hagler was. With her decrepit body and her sallow skin, her oxygen tank rolling behind her. I mean, obviously you're not fine right now because you're in the hospital, but a week ago you were fine. I don't sound like myself.
Nah, I wasn't. I've just been good at hiding it. I don't have as much energy as I used to, and I've been having chest pains for some time.
He admits. Because of the tumor?
Yeah, partly.
So they can shrink it. That's what radiation is for, and the chemo will kill the cells.
It's already spreading, Calla.
Soft gray eyes finally lift to meet mine.
It's in my lymph nodes, in my bones. All that stuff just buys me a tiny bit more time, and it won't be good time.
How much time, exactly? The question comes out in a croaky whisper.
It's hard to say, but they gave me 2, maybe 3 months with it.
I suck in a sharp, shaky breath. And how much without? He hesitates.
4 to 6 weeks at most, they're thinking.
A cold feeling spreads through my chest as his words hit me like a punch to the stomach. How is that possible? He looks fine. The doctors are wrong, obviously. They're always wrong, Dad. Always! I stammer as the words tumble out. I hear stories all the time about how people beat the odds and survive for years. He sighs.
Not always, Calla. Those are the stories that people remember because they need to. People need hope. But not always. Not this time.
My initial shock ebbs as frustration and anger with his refusal to listen rushes forward. So that's just it? There's no talking about it anymore? There's no convincing you to at least try to live? For me? For Mom? My voice cracks. I'm getting desperate now.
If I let them pump me with all that shit, I'll be spending my last bit of time sleeping and puking and in some hospital room for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week until I stop or I die. That's not how I want to go. I want to do it on my own terms.
He reaches for my hand, but I find myself unable to take it, and after a moment, his fingers fall lazily next to his side.
I thought about you when the doctor gave me the news. You were the very first thing I thought about. I didn't know if I should call you right away or if I shouldn't call at all. Wasn't sure if I had any right to. Figured you might not want to know after all these years.
His eyes grow glossy and he blinks the sheen away.
I'm glad Agnes didn't listen to me and did what I didn't know how to do, what I didn't have the guts to do. I'm so glad you came.
Another wave of realization dawns on me. They knew how bad it was? Agnes and Jonah? They knew? Have they been leading me on this entire time?
I never told Agnes. I was planning to, and then the next thing I knew, you were on your way. I didn't know how you'd take my decision not to—
Bullshit, I snap. You knew damn well that I wouldn't be okay with you just giving up. That no one would be. That's why you've been hiding it. His lips press together, and then he nods. He's not denying it, at least.
I know you probably spent a lot of years angry with me. I figured if I could just have 1 week to get to know you again without this hanging over our heads, 1 week where maybe I wasn't disappointing you.
The week had been good, I'll admit, but now it's all gone to hell. So Jonah knew. I feel a sharp sense of betrayal as I say those words out loud, as the pieces click together. That's why he's been pushing me to stay, because when I get on that plane for home, I'll be saying goodbye to my dad forever. The next few weeks, months, are going to be hard. They'll be hard not because my dad will be fighting cancer. There is no fight. He's already given up. Without another word, I get up and duck out of the hospital room. By the time I've reached the exterior doors, I'm running. Chapter 23. 20 minutes standing under a stream of hot water in a daze, and I still can't seem to find any warmth or comfort in it. All I feel is the biting sting from the numerous blisters on my heels and toes. The distance between Banger's local hospital and my dad's house must be at least 6 miles, and I ran all of it in my rain boots. My arms feel sluggish as I lift them to my hair to scrub my scalp, working the shampoo into a heavy lather, releasing the scent of wood-burning smoke that my hair absorbed while in the cabin. I begin to laugh. It's a soft, humorless sound. Not really a laugh at all, as I remember my conversation with Diana. In the club that night, it feels like forever ago that I voiced a seemingly unbelievable thought at the time. What if I came to Alaska and somehow found the dad I'd always wanted, despite his many flaws, despite the fact that he all but abandoned me so many years ago, only to lose him again? It's happening. I found him, and now I'm going to lose him all over again. This time, for good. He's breaking my heart all over again, whether he intended to or not. I'm not sure exactly when the water pressure started going, but suddenly I'm standing under a sad trickle, my head covered in soapy suds, my body shivering from the loss of heat. No, 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 don't tell me. I fumble with the showerhead, adjusting it this way and that. Nothing. I turn the tap all the way to the right. Nothing. We've run out of water. Jonah warned me that this could happen. I let out a heavy sigh of frustration and drop my forehead to the shower wall with a thud. God damn it, slips from my lips. And I finally stop fighting the tears. A soft knock sounds on the bathroom door.
Kala?
I press my lips to my knee to keep from answering. I can't deal with Jonah right now. A moment later, he calls out more sternly,
Kala?
The doorknob rattles.
Let me in.
Leave me alone, I mutter.
Look,
Either you let me in or I'm coming in.
I don't answer. Don't make a move. The floor creaks as he moves down the hall, away from the bathroom. But then he's back again, and there's an odd metal-against-metal crunch. With a pop, the bathroom door eases open. I can see Jonah's distorted reflection in the shiny chrome tap, hovering in the doorway, but I don't turn around.
What are you doing?
I ran out of water. How long ago was that, that I sank to the tub floor and curled my arms around my knees? It must have been a while. I've stopped shivering, stopped crying. My hair is still covered in soap, though the suds have flattened out. He sighs.
Come on, you can use mine.
He steps into the bathroom and stretches out a hand. I ignore it, shifting away from him.
Calla.
When did you find out? I ask, my voice oddly hollow. He settles his big frame on the edge of the tub, keeping his gaze ahead of him on the vanity doors. He's still wearing the same clothes, the smell of smoke permeated into them. Last night feels like so long ago now.
The same day Aggie told me what was going on, the day you came. I had a bad feeling when I pressed him for details. He was all wishy-washy about the treatment plan, about how many days a week he'd have to be in Anchorage, where he'd be staying. Then he took off and I flew out to get you.
He studies his ragged fingernails intently for a moment.
I got it out of him later that night.
That's the difference between Jonah and me right there. I just accepted my dad's reluctance to talk about it because deep down, I wasn't ready to talk about it either. I was just as happy to avoid the truth that I should have seen coming from a mile away. So you already knew, that morning I came to ask for a ride to Myers? He's known all along. His head falls into his hands, his fingers combing through his hair, making it stand on end.
You made me promise not to say a word to you or Aggie. Believe me, I wanted to so many times. I came close last night, but Wren wanted to be the one to try and explain his decision. I couldn't take that away from him.
He pauses.
You can be mad at me all you want. You can hate my guts and not want to talk to me, but it won't change the fact that Wren's going to die, and we've all got to figure out a way to come to terms with that.
Did you at least try to talk him into the treatment?
What do you think, Calla?
Irritation flares in his voice.
Don't you dare think for one second that you want this to happen any less, or that this is going to hurt you more than it does me or Agnes or Mabel. You're going to go back to your life in Toronto with a memory of him. Meanwhile, we'll be here, feeling him gone every single damn day.
He cuts off abruptly, his voice turning hoarse. How are you not angry with him?
Not angry? I'm fucking pissed. Pissed that he waited so long to get checked out. Pissed that he didn't quit that shit years ago.
His booming voice fills the small space. It's a moment before he speaks again, more calmly.
But Wren doesn't make rash decisions. He thinks long and hard about them. If even the doctors are saying they can only buy him a few extra weeks, then I can't blame him for not wanting to waste what he's got.
What about the rest of us who have to sit by and watch? I ask hollowly. Hasn't he considered what this is going to do to the people who love him?
He's convinced himself that he's making the best decision for everyone's sake. And the thing with him is, once he's made up his mind, there's no turning him around. He's more stubborn than I am.
Like the decision he made to let my mom and me go all those years ago. What is life going to be like around here with him gone, I wonder, as my eyes crawl up the molded shower wall? This little modular house with the tacky ducts felt so empty when I first stepped into it, and while it's still the same empty little house, I now have memories attached to it to help fill it up, of my dad's soft chuckle carrying through the perpetual silence, of the smell of his fresh-brewed coffee in the morning, of the sound of the floors creaking as he pads down the hallway after saying goodnight to me. Such little things, tiny, trivial slivers of his life that shouldn't count as memories. And yet I know they'll be the first things that come to mind when I think of him here, years from now. And that's just within these walls. What about out there, beyond them? What's going to happen to Wild? I ask numbly. Jonah's not running things until my dad gets better. He's running things until my dad dies. And then what? Jonah shakes his head.
I don't know. That's a conversation for another day, not today.
Why did you even let me waste my time building that website? It was totally pointless and stupid.
No, it wasn't. You wanted to try and help your dad. You were making an effort to know what he's been doing around here all these years.
I feel Jonah's heavy gaze finally venture over to linger on my bare skin. He pauses.
What the hell did you do to your feet?
I ran home from the hospital in my rain boots, I admit sheepishly, curling my body tighter, suddenly feeling self-conscious about my nudity, even if Jonah saw every part of me many times over last night. Nothing about this moment feels remotely sexual.
Jesus, they're all chewed up. I've got a first aid kit at my place. You need to cover those blisters.
He reaches for my towel, holding it out for me.
Come on. Water truck doesn't come until tomorrow. If you want plumbing, you better grab your things and stay with me.
After a moment, he adds a soft,
please.
Finally, I accept the towel from him, knowing that I need to be near him tonight, running water or not. The bathroom door opens as I'm rinsing face wash from my cheeks and nose. Almost done, I swear. The curtain draws open behind me and Jonah steps in. Despite my dour mood, the sight of him naked stirs my blood instantly. Okay, fine. I make to climb out. He grabs hold of my shoulders, keeping me in place. His thumb sliding over my slick skin, back and forth a few times, soothingly. And then his long, muscular arms are roping around my body, and he's pulling me backward against him.
I'm sorry,
he murmurs, bowing down to nestle his face in the crook of my neck, his beard tickling my skin.
I wanted to tell you, but I also didn't. Don't hate me.
I let my head tilt into his. I don't hate you. Far from it. I don't even think I'm angry at Jonah. I'm angry with my father for the path he's chosen, with life for how unfair it can be. But Jonah? Reaching up, I let my nails skate over his biceps a few times before gripping his arms tightly, returning the embrace. Glad you're here. I whisper. I can't imagine facing this without him. He folds in closer, tighter, until I'm cocooned within him, the hard press of his collarbone all the way to his thighs, conforming to my body. I can feel him growing hard against my back, and yet he doesn't make a move to try to satisfy that need. I think he's too busy satisfying another. We simply stand there, holding each other until the water turns cold. This is so much easier when you're conscious and sitting upright, I murmur, slowly drawing the comb through Jonah's beard, feeling his blue eyes intently studying my mouth.
And I've actually consented to it.
And I'm straddling your lap. Shh, don't move, I scold, frowning as my gaze shifts from side to side, examining his jaw, making sure I've trimmed it evenly.
How bad were your hands shaking that night?
I was fine while I was doing it. I was totally calm and in control.
And after?
Petrified. My dad said I was twitchy. Jonah's head falls back into the couch as he laughs. It's such a deep, beautiful sound, and I'm momentarily lulled by it, admiring his thick throat, imagining my mouth pressed against it.
You weren't, seriously, were you?
I was scared that I'd gone too far, and you were going to hate me again, I admit.
What? I never hated you, Calla.
I give him a high-browed, knowing look.
No. Even when I was annoyed as hell and chewing you out at Myers that day, half of me wanted to see what you'd do if I just went ahead and kissed you.
Really? I smooth my palm along his jawline, appreciating the perfection. What would I have done? Probably freaked out. He was just the angry Yeti back then. He made me angry. And yet now that I'm getting to know Jonah, I don't know how I ever wasn't attracted to him. Horrendous, bushy beard and all. His eyes twinkle as if he can read my thoughts. I toss the scissors and comb to the coffee table, satisfied. There. I've fixed you up as requested. I knew you were secretly vain.
Did being your plaything for a bit make you happy?
Maybe, I admit, Riley.
Good. Figured we could both use a distraction.
Yeah, I guess so. I sigh heavily as reality drifts back in. Smoothing my hand over Jonah's wrist, I turn it to check his watch. I guess you have to go back to Wild now? It's been a couple of hours since he found me curled up in the shower. I was sure he'd have left by now, but I'm so thankful that he hasn't.
I don't want to,
he admits somberly.
10 years working there, and this is the first day I want nothing to do with planes and people. But I should check in with all the guys. They're probably wondering why Ren hasn't called yet.
Are you going to tell them?
We all know Ren's not going to jump on the phone and do it. Some of them have already heard, I'm sure, but yeah. It's better they hear it from me than Maxine or one of their passengers. Plus, I can't leave everything to Agnes to handle, not when she has Mabel to deal with, too.
He sighs.
That poor kid. Ren's like a father to her. This is going to absolutely destroy her.
I've been so focused on my own pain, I haven't given much thought to her. Now that I do, I note that there's no flare of jealousy behind his words, no spark of envy, only sympathy. I'll come with you. Just let me grab my phone from the house. I plugged it in when I got home from the hospital and left it there, having no desire to talk to anyone from back home. I make to slide off, but warm, strong hands settle onto either side of my backside, trapping me in place. Jonah's gaze drifts downward over the fitted, but first coffee t-shirt that Diana had made for me, to where my thighs meet his. He opens his mouth, but then seems to change his mind about whatever he was going to say. Steely blue eyes lift to meet mine. What? I ask softly, smoothing my palms over either side of his jaw again. I can't get enough of the feel of his beard against my palms. That comment Diana made about how having me shave Aaron's face was too intimate for her liking? I think I get it now. Jonah pulls my body flush to his, until his hands are gripping my back tightly in an embrace, and he's buried his face in the crook of my neck, his hot breath skating over my skin, sending my blood racing. I can feel the hard press of him between my thighs. He wants me, but he doesn't feel right asking. Reaching up to cocoon his head within my arms, I roll my hips, letting him know that it's more than okay. The moment Jonah strolls into Wild's lobby, he seems to shed the coat of reluctance he wore in the car ride over, my hand cradled in his.
Working hard, Sonny?
He calls out in that booming deep voice, startling the Alaska native couple huddled in a far corner, the only passengers waiting in the lobby. Sonny, who was leaning over the front desk, chatting up Sharon, stiffens immediately.
I was just finishing up my break. I'm going to get back out there. We're almost done loading up for the last few runs,
Sonny babbles, already taking backward steps toward the exit. Jonah drops a hand on his shoulder.
Sounds good. Tell Clark to come see me when he's got a minute. Will do.
Sonny bolts out the door. You're a horrible human being, Sharon hisses with an accusatory tone. Jonah throws his hands in the air.
What did I do?
Oh, come on. You know you're intimidating.
I am not.
He turns to me.
Am I?
Sometimes, I admit. And obnoxious, and annoying, and gentle and affectionate.
All right, all right.
He waves me off with a smirk. Mabel is curled up in a chair next to Sharon, her head bowed as she plays a game on her phone. Jonah pauses a moment to look down at her, and his jaw tenses.
Hey, kiddo.
He ruffles her hair. She looks up long enough to give him a sad, shy smile before ducking down again. Clearly not in the mood to talk, which is shocking for her. He leaves her be, disappearing into the office. I love your hair all up like that, Sharon says, gesturing toward my messy topknot. Her green eyes are full of sympathy, even as she tries to play it off casually. Yeah, that's called Jonah hid my hair detangler and my volumizer and every other beauty product I own in the name of revenge. I'll have to search his house later when I care enough to. In the grand scheme of things, I've almost forgotten that I've been barefaced for days. It's been oddly liberating.
That sounds like something he'd do.
she says with a soft chuckle, and then swallows. A pained expression fills her face. We heard the news. I'm so sorry, Calla. Word does travel fast. I wonder how exactly it came out. Not that it matters, really. I steal a glance at Mabel, and Jonah's words from earlier linger in my mind. The reality is that while he may be my dad, I have an entire life built back home that doesn't include Ren Fletcher and hasn't for many years. Meanwhile, he's everything to people around here. Standing in Wild, accepting Sharon's condolences, it doesn't feel right. I should be the one offering it. All I can manage is a nod, and then I duck into the back office. Agnes and Jonah are going over some scheduling and weather reports with George. Agnes flashes a sad, hesitant smile my way, and I offer her one back. She's as innocent in all this as I am, after all. I hold my phone in the air. Do you mind if I use my dad's office for a minute? Jonah waves me in.
Nah, go ahead.
I push the door shut behind me, quickly scanning through all the, did you see all your likes, are you getting these, where are you, Nordstrom's having a sale on your studded boots, did you bring them with you? You need to get a picture in a plane with them, stat. Text from Diana that I don't have the energy or interest in responding to right now. There's also a how are things text from my mom. My chest tightens with dread. How is she going to deal with this news? I need to call and tell her, and soon. But I find myself hesitating. Maybe because it'll seem more real, more final then. That voice is still there in my head, prattling away in a rushed, desperate tone, trying to convince me that the doctors are wrong about how serious it is, that my father has made a terrible decision, that he needs to fight, that maybe I can still get through to him. And then Jonah's voice mixes in, his sobering words about coming to terms with the grim reality. It's on steady repeat. Who knows when reality is going to sink in, but I do know one thing. I don't want to be thousands of miles away when it does. With a deep inhale, I call the airline.
She finally fell asleep about 2 hours ago,
Simon says through a yawn. It's not quite 5 a.m. in Toronto. I left Jonah's house and trekked across the lawn to my dad's to check my messages. He really needs to join this century and get internet, and found several from Simon telling me to call his cell no matter what time. Of course I panicked and dialed, not even checking the clock. I should have known Simon would want to check in on me. I've never listened to so much dead air over a phone as I did this afternoon, when I sat down in my dad's old, worn office chair and called my mom to share the bad news. She barely spoke as I spelled out the reality of it all, that we were wrong, that they hadn't caught it early, that they caught it far too late. I talked with a wavering voice, shedding quiet tears, and I listened to the silence on the other end, knowing that what I was actually hearing was her heart breaking. She didn't take it well.
No, she didn't.
Simon's charming British lilt is a welcome voice. I realize how much I miss seeing him in the morning as I collect my latte with a grumbled thanks. I miss his dry-humored quips as I stroll through the house, always coming or going from something. I miss the fact that he somehow always knows when I could use an ear. I miss that he's always there for me, in a way that my father never was. In a way that I had started picturing Ren Fletcher to be in the coming years without realizing that I was actually doing it.
How are you taking this, Calla?
I peer up at the strings of Christmas lights dangling from the ceiling that I just plugged in. The bulbs are too big, the colors too dull, the light cast too weak. And yet, the canopy they provide is somehow mesmerizing. I can't peel my eyes from them. I don't know. I'm angry.
About what?
Simon knows exactly what. He just wants me to verbalize it. But he didn't tell me sooner. That he's refusing treatment. Take your pick. It's all shitty.
You're right.
But there's always a but with Simon.
No buts this time. You have every right to feel this way. I would be angry and frustrated, too, if someone I loved wasn't doing everything they could to stay with me for as long as possible.
I just don't get how he could be so selfish. He has people who love him, and he's hurting all of them.
Do you love him?
Of course I do. Simon sighs into my ear.
Well, that's something you wouldn't have confessed to so easily sitting on the porch steps that night with me now, is it?
I guess not. I wouldn't have felt it then. And yet, just a week later, there's no doubt in my mind that I love my father, and I don't want him to die, which makes this all so much more painful. But he doesn't seem to care about anyone but himself. He never has. Even as I say the words, I know they're not true. He doesn't care enough, I amend.
Do you think he hasn't thought his decision through?
How could he have? I mean, who doesn't fight cancer?
It does happen, for various reasons.
And Simon, for one, would know. He's had his share of terminal patients who come to him for help with dealing with their grim reality.
Did he explain his decision to you?
Yeah, I mutter, and I repeat everything my father told me earlier.
Sounds like maybe he hasn't made the decision lightly.
Maybe, but it's still not okay. It'll never be okay. What would you do?
I'd like to think I'd go through with the treatment, at least to start. But I'm not in his shoes. Besides, your mother would have me hogtied and dragged to the hospital if I even suggested skipping it.
She should come here and do that to him, too, I say half-heartedly. Or at least call him. I'm sure she still remembers his number. She sure dialed it enough times 12 years ago. Silence meets my words. I mean,
there isn't anything about what happened with your parents that I'm not aware of, Calla,
Simon says carefully. I sigh. Of course Simon would know. God, what a mess my parents are.
I imagine Ren is quite scared,
Simon finally offers, as a way out of the awkwardness. He said he wants to die on his own terms.
That doesn't mean he can't be downright terrified while doing it.
I guess. And I ran right out of there today, leaving him alone. A sting of guilt pricks me. We sit in loaded silence, my pajama-clad body wrapped in my flannel jacket and a layer of blankets, my gaze drifting out over the night sky, still much brighter than what I'm used to for almost 1 a.m. So, I guess you don't have any wise words to make this all better.
Sorry. No wise words,
Simon says with a sigh. That's okay. Just talking to you helps.
Good. And remember, you can be angry and frustrated with him for his decision, but still love and support him through it.
I'm not sure how to do that.
You'll figure it out. You're a well-adjusted and self-aware young woman. And you make smart decisions. Calla, you coming back to bed?
Jonah hollers from somewhere unseen but nearby. When I threw on my clothes and left him to make my phone call, he was reaching for a leather-bound book on his nightstand, the sheet draped loosely over his bottom half. It was an oddly erotic sight. Speaking of making smart decisions, Jesus, half of Banger probably heard him.
Let me guess. That must be that horrid pilot from next door that I've been hearing about from your mother.
Simon says dryly.
Pray tell me, how is your vicious feud with him going?
I used up all my dad's water, so I have to stay over there tonight if I want plumbing. I could also stay at Agnes's house, a point I'm not about to bring up.
Right. Well, that was kind of him to welcome you, despite your being mortal enemies.
It really was. And Simon isn't buying my lame excuse for a second. Jonah's heavy boots stomp up the porch stairs. He pushes open the door, and I catch a flash of movement next to his feet. It's Bandit scurrying in ahead of him, his beady eyes shimmering against the glow of the Christmas lights. He lets out one of those high-pitched chattering sounds. I cringe. Hey, Simon, what's your professional opinion about someone who has a pet raccoon? I ask loudly, to make it clear to Jonah that I'm on the phone with my stepdad.
Considering we seem to have two, who am I to pass judgment? Good night, Calla. Call me whenever you need to.
Night. Love you. It just rolls off my tongue for Simon. and I have yet to say it to my real father even once. Jonah's gaze drifts over the ceiling of the porch.
You and Mabel did a good job.
Yeah, it's kind of cozy out here now.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were on the phone. You feel better after talking to him?